Welcome to the Football Fill-In, everybody. The three of us today, lads, do you know this? Between us, we have got over 1,200 football professional appearances.
Are we counting my FIFA career mode in? And how many trophies? Can I claim that treble from COVID on FIFA?
Yes, yes. You can have it. You can have it. We've got super left-back Paul Robinson. Nearly 800 career appearances you've got, mate. Well done. I'm proud of you. Thank you. Some career. There's only been 5 games over the Premier League weekend, so not too much to touch on, but we have got loads more to talk about. We've got Jordan Henderson, Eric Dier, a bit of a Nana talk in there as well. Football Fill-In, let's have it.
There's no better feeling than a personal win, and the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Right then, boys. Happy Monday morning. We've got to start with Man City. Kevin De Bruyne. Robbo, I'm going to start with you. Yeah. You're a left back. Well, you were a left back, sorry. If you're up against Kevin De Bruyne, what are you thinking before the game and during the game?
Dropping off like Newcastle defence did. Well, how do you play against a player like Kevin De Bruyne? You probably got to play smart, understand where he goes, his positioning. Talk to your midfield players in front of you. Try and get them in positions to try and stop them passes through the lines to him, because when he's in free flow, he's a hell of a player.
Yeah, I tell you what, just jump in there, because you're a goalkeeper, you played left back, make a good point there. I was watching the game on Saturday and I noticed it in the first half. Newcastle's midfield was very straight. Yeah. You normally get a dropping off midfielder. Yeah. Phil Foden was dropping in between the defence and the midfield all half, getting the ball. He likes to hold on to it. And I was saying, because I was doing a watch along, I said, if De Bruyne comes on and they don't figure that out, he'll kill him.
Yeah.
And they never did. And he came on and he had all that space. And it's amazing from a tactical point of view that you can see that at home, but Eddie Howe must be doing that for a reason, because that space was there.
Why is he doing that?
It's so hard, though. When you look at players like Foden, Grealish, Bernardo Silva, yeah, De Bruyne, they're so intelligent. They just keep rotating. Mm. Even Rodri. It's like they don't stay in one position. No, they constantly
move. It's
free-flowing
football, isn't it?
So you've got to keep communicating. As hard as it is, you've got to be brave and keep a high line, even though at one point you might get that ball over the top, yeah, and they're going to run onto it. But it's just trying to close the gaps as much as you can.
Do you feel for Kieran Trippier? Because you were fuming with Kieran Trippier a little bit, weren't you? Obviously, when Man City scored the last-minute goal, the De Bruyne ball over to the top, Trippier kind of... It was just a momentary, like... lapse, wasn't it? A little bit of a switch off, but it was enough. That's all that it takes nowadays, isn't it?
But as fullbacks, you can't switch off, can you?
Yeah.
It's like that little bit of movement, but the ball, oh my God. I mean, I could just keep watching that,
yeah,
like all the time, with just the technique. Even midfield players, like the young midfield players now, is watch players like Kevin De Bruyne with how they finesse the ball into them areas. But the movement of Bob,
yeah,
like Oscar Bob, like what? I mean, his touch as well, mm, and the composure then for a young lad just to take it past the goalkeeper a little
bit.
And then
incredible, weren't they?
Yeah, they're a joy to watch when they're in free flow, Man City. But De Bruyne back, I mean, he's world class.
It's ominous, isn't it?
Yeah,
he's
world class.
What do you make of Pep Guardiola like celebrating the way he did? Because you don't really ever see that too much from him, do you?
No, well, I think you look at the league table, and we're all expecting this inevitable. I mean, I still have them as favourites, but you look at the next few games, I think they've got some really winnable games coming up. And he'd have looked at that Newcastle game and probably gone, if we drop points there, it sort of gives Liverpool an advantage, so he will know what a big win it is. I mean, I thought they were the better team throughout. I thought Newcastle had that 5 minutes where they scored a couple of goals. And even De Bruyne getting the goal and the assist, I saw a couple of crosses from the right-hand side where he was like, if Haaland was on, I think he gets on the end of that. So I think they were worthy winners, but I think the reason they celebrated it was a bit weird, wasn't it? Because it was almost like they'd won the title or something, but I think it's just because he knows that that's the kickstart to now probably go and win 10 games in a row and win the title.
Well, stats from the game then. Man City, 11 shots on target they had, by the way. 7 off target, 73% possession, 13 corner kicks. Mm. Newcastle did well to stay in that then, in fairness then, didn't they? Eddie Howe, there's kind of murmurs, not really, but yes and no. I think the murmurs come from outside of Newcastle. I think within Newcastle, within the city, everybody's happy with Eddie Howe and the way that it's going with Newcastle. Everybody knows that the injuries and all that. Yeah. But I think outside of it, there's a few little bit of murmurs, isn't there?
Yeah.
He's not under any real threat, is he?
I wouldn't think so. I think he's a top, top manager, and I think they're lucky to have him, Newcastle, with what he's done there, the way he turned it around and made them survive and push them up the table. Then Champions League football, he's got the club. And unfortunately, we just go through these spells. All teams have had injuries. It's how can the rest of your squad cope with it? So for me, I don't see him being under pressure. I think he's doing a fantastic job. It's just trying to manage it to get them all them players back to then be in full strength. And we'll see. We've seen a reaction with them. I mean, to score 2 goals against Man City and the way that they play on the front foot at home, it is a tough place to go when them fans get right behind them. And the 2 goals, Man City, we're talking about fullbacks like Walker. He'd be disappointed both times coming inside. Same corner as a fullback. You've always got to show him outside there and just keep him going line. So they've got the quality in scoring goals. I just think it's just getting them players back now for Eddie Howe and just trying to get that stability back.
What's that like within like the Newcastle dressing room when it seems to be like another injury after another injury? Do you know what I mean? It's like one's falling down and then next week you play another game and 2 more get injuries. What's that like for the team? Does it kind of lower the morale a little bit coupled with the bad results?
It will knock morale, but it also then it's a chance for the players that have not been playing. So they've got to go and take the shirt then, haven't they? That's what they've got to look at. But yeah, when you lose key players, confidence high, and then players are now out for, 3-4 weeks or maybe a couple of months, big players for the team, it is going to have a knock-on effect of how the team plays.
What's a realistic finishing position for Newcastle this season?
Well, I was going to ask you, I've said about Newcastle, it really depends on the appetite of these owners, doesn't it? Because they've got Villa away next, they've got Fulham away in the Cup. If they were to lose both those games, you're out all the Cups, you'll definitely be in the bottom half of the table. I don't think that they should look at any change until the summer, and I wouldn't mind Southgate leaving and Eddie Howe being the next England manager. So if Newcastle decide to make a change, I wouldn't be that bothered. But I suppose it depends on Newcastle's ambitions, because he overachieved massively last year, like Paul was saying, Champions League football. But if they finish around mid-table, he's probably underachieved for what he's got. Yeah. So depends what Newcastle's owners. I mean, what do you think?
I keep listening to Simon Jordan on Talk Sport, and he's always saying about Eddie Howe being a fantastic manager, but long term, it's kind of reminiscent of Manchester City when they first got took over. Is they had Mark Hughes and they had Pellegrini and Mancini, and it always seemed like they were just waiting for final one, and then they stumbled upon Pep Guardiola and it was like boom, that's it. And I don't want it to be like that, because Eddie Howe being English, I want to see him do really, really well for a Premier League football team. But I worry that they are kind of just biding their time. They're going to keep adding, obviously FFP is going to be a massive thing for them, but I feel like they're just going to keep adding players, and then at some point, dreadedly, I think they might pull the plug and go for a real big boy. I don't know who that big boy is going to be, but I think that's what they'll do eventually. But hopefully not for another year or two.
I think whatever happens with Eddie Howe as well, he's done at Newcastle enough for, he had the potential at Bournemouth on his CV. But if he got the sack at Newcastle, it's not like he's going to be like Gerrard, or Lampard. He's going to, they'd take him at probably half the Premier League clubs overnight.
Yeah, he's going to get another big club, 100%.
Well, we're going to talk about Tottenham in a minute. Is Newcastle, is everybody sort of like second favourite team? Or is that just me?
Not me.
Not you?
No, not me, no.
Okay, it's just me.
It's just Ben. Who's yours, Paul? Have you got one?
Spurs. I love watching Spurs.
Yeah, I love watching Spurs. Spurs were my actual favourite team, by the way. They're my actual favourite team.
I don't like watching him.
Which brings us nicely onto Tottenham. Spurs. It brings us perfectly onto Spurs, because Manchester United played out a lovely 2-2 draw yesterday. You did the live stream for it. Talk us through your thoughts of the game.
No, I do like Spurs. It's just that, obviously, being a United fan, I didn't enjoy that yesterday. But I thought that the thing that resonated with me was this: the amount of shots they had. They had over 200 passes more than United with their, and I think their pass accuracy was like 90%. United was
Bentancur. How good was Bentancur yesterday?
Yeah, yeah. And I thought that to have Son, Kulusevski, I thought was a big loss. Who else was out? Madison's been out a while. Yeah, Basuma and Saar, massive. Yeah. Yep. To come and win the midfield battle and then dominate at Old Trafford, and United to be coming out sort of like going, that's a good result. It's almost like it wasn't Man United at home to Spurs. It was like Man way, United were away to City.
Yeah,
and we took a point. And Spurs were so much better. Their trajectory is fantastic. And I think they've got every right to be disappointed, because United got the early goal, but all we had, and I said it in the preview last week, I thought we'd win because Spurs play a high line, and that's how we beat Villa. And we're quite good when teams play a high line, because you've got that diagonal to Rashford. But even though Ange did that, Porro played really well second half against Rashford. And I thought that, I think that's all United had. That's all United had, is that long diagonal to Rashford. And I heard Sheringham saying it on the radio today, and he was spot on. He said, look, if Rashford scores, it's great, but you've got to mix it up. Yeah. He gets the ball, he takes someone on, he has a shot. That's the only tactic they've got. If I'm Rasmus Højlund, he scores a goal because Rashford's going to shoot, and it breaks to him and he shoots. He gets no other chance in the game. So
it's true,
one-dimensional.
Rashford would be so infuriated. If you're a forward player, you would be so infuriated by playing with Rashford, because you know that when he gets the ball, his head is down, isn't it, Robbo?
Yeah,
he's not looking around. He's not trying to find Højlund, is he? Almost the goal that Højlund scores is like...
It's because he runs into someone.
Yeah, exactly that. He's not trying to find the pass or anything like that. It's like he just has this one mode of head down and try and get the shot off.
What frustrates me with Rashford is he's such a good player. We all know he's such a good player, but at the moment he seems like he's just going through the motions a little bit.
Yeah.
It's like there's times in the game yesterday as well, though. He's got opportunities to shoot. He's beat Porro.
Yeah.
He's on the floor. And then he decides to have another touch.
Yeah.
Get your shots off. A confident Rashford would take that on,
I feel,
with his left foot. No matter what we say about him, he would get that shot off if he cuts past Porro, just get it off of his left foot, across the goal. But at the moment, he's just not. He's got his head down, maybe a little bit disinterested, a little bit with the fans. Obviously, he's had a little bit of grief with the fans and scores the goal, he celebrates with the hand emoji of like...
I don't like all of this sort of stuff. It's always like, just let the football do the talking.
Yeah, yeah.
If you just let the football do the talking, it always has to be something else, doesn't it? It always has to be a celebration, or it always has to be an Instagram post or a comment or something. And that's what the rhetoric always seems
to be. Well, what's
the
problem with Man United fans having a problem with a player who's on big money and
not
playing well? What's the battle there?
Yeah.
You know, it's childish. And I think this all comes down to mentality. He's not the only one. There's a lot of players like that, United, who past and present. You know, look at people like Pogba's come and gone, and Di Maria. There seems to be this ego that, just go out and perform every week. And the great thing is, the goal... He actually passes it to Højlund, gets it back, and has a better shot. And fans have been saying this.
The way
for years,
he sorted his feet out, honestly, that there is Marcus Rashford in a nutshell. The way he sorted his feet out to get the touch and then quickly get the shot off is a world class. It's a world class action.
That happens because he passes and gets his head up, and Rasmus,
so he's more
unselfishly,
aware.
First time gives it him back. Better shot, better chance.
Right, I've got a couple of theories for you all. Right, so two players I want to talk about here: Højlund and Werner. All right, Højlund. Well, I'll start with Højlund. Okay, the goal that he scored, I think, is going to be the way that Højlund is going to maximise his abilities for Manchester United, is get the ball out of his feet and get a shot off. Because when he gets the ball out of his feet on that left foot and unleashes one, like any goalkeeper in the world, honestly, is thinking, please don't shoot, please don't shoot.
Can't save that thing.
It was ridiculous, right? And that, I think that's how he's going to do the best for Manchester United, is any opportunity he gets, beat his player or get the ball into space, out of his feet, bang, just get a shot off. As simple as that. Opposite is Timo Werner, all right? I don't think he can get the ball out of his feet and get a shot off, Robbo. There's certain players, right, that just aren't able to strike the ball. Like, I mean, put your foot through it. Like a Paul Scholes. You remember Paul Scholes, right? 30, 40 yards from goal, he would be getting his foot with the ball out of his feet and he would be looking to absolutely drill the life out of me. Wibbling it, wobbling. I don't think Timo Werner has got those feet. I think he's got, like, bow feet. I'm being deadly serious here. Watch the way he played yesterday, right? It's like he almost runs like that, and he can't open his hips up to get that angle, right? Look at me weird if you want. This is what I believe genuinely, right? And the two chances he had yesterday, it's almost like he has to run round the ball to try and whip it, yeah? And that's how he does it. And I don't think he's got that ability to be able to, do you know what I mean? Just get that full-on strike off.
I think he's the type of player that just plays off shoulders. Up front, I don't see him as a wide person with the way that he plays. I mean, yeah, okay, he's direct at times, but like you say there, he looks cumbersome with the ball at his feet, and you never really know as a player, you don't know.
It reminds me of Lukaku, with the way Lukaku's the same. He's not able to, 30 yards out, get the ball out and just drill one.
Yeah.
He's never going to be that sort of player. It's like...
he's like a poacher for me. When I look at Werner, he's like that poacher. He's like, but both of them, like Hoyland as well, they need service.
Yeah.
It's like all Man United teams, when you've watched them in the past, they've always had service. The wingers have always provided for the centre forwards.
Yeah, yeah.
Man United haven't got quite that balance just yet.
Is that though? Is that having selfish wingers as well though?
I think that's recruitment as well.
Yeah.
I think the Man United have got to go and look at players that are Man United players and have done what they've done.
They want to get the ball in the box and help out the team.
The Man United that we used to play against were—they won. They were winners.
Yeah.
They won. It's like even yesterday when you're watching how they got a soft underbelly of defending set pieces.
Oh.
What Man United team have you played against in the past that have ever let you have free headers in the box like they did?
Probably no chance. That was about the last time.
There's like no chance. There's like Tottenham had more like first contacts in the box of winning free headers.
Right. So that this brings me on to my nice point. I want to talk about Onana and I want to talk about Manchester United at set pieces, all right? Because yesterday it was a horror show, wasn't it? It was a horror show. Every time they got a corner, every time they were putting balls into the box, I'm thinking, Tottenham have got a real good chance here because Onana didn't want to know yesterday. Honestly, he did not want to know. He was rooted to his line. He was not even half a step off of his line, Robbo.
He was on the line.
He was so stuck to his line and
Bostic feet.
The thought, what was it, sorry?
Bostic feet.
Bostic feet, yeah, I like it. Super Yoo-hoo feet. He didn't even entertain the thought of trying to come out and help his teammates out. It was like, I don't care even if this ball is 3 yards out, I'm not coming for it. Unless it's on top of me, I'm going to stand here and if I can make the save and react, cool. But otherwise, I'm not getting involved. That's just pure lack of confidence, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's been going on. Look, I watch United every game and this predates Ten Hag. It predates Onana. It was going on with De Gea as well. We bought a set piece coach in, I think, Ramsey under Ollie. And I'm not blaming him, but maybe you do. Well, you've got to, haven't you? You've got to be harsh at the end of the day. We can't score from crosses. We can't score from free kicks. And we're such a vulnerable side from defending those as well. So it's a huge... I mean, you've got Ineos and Sir Jim, but like that's an area to solve overnight, surely.
Well, that's massive. Played. So you've obviously, when you were at Millwall, who was in charge of sorting the set pieces out?
Adam Barrett, the assistant manager, yeah. And then I took over when Adam took charge for the four games.
Yeah.
But it's communication with your players. You play to your players' strengths. Like you see where they need to be. You pick the strongest players against their strongest players and then the other players just pick up the zones and the areas where they know. But again, it's like you've been a goalkeeper, Ben. Confidence-wise, from crosses, for you as a defender, you know your goalkeeper's coming for it, you're buzzing as a defender.
Yeah, buzzing.
But if you're a goalkeeper that's not, like say you're having a wobble,
you put yourself
in that situation there with Onana, how are you feeling yourself as a goalkeeper? What are your thoughts going through your mind when set pieces are coming like that from your point of view?
You're petrified, Robert. Honestly, you're absolutely petrified. When you're low on confidence, when you're having a bit of a wobble, the bravery it takes to be able to take that front step and before the ball's even come in and gone, I'm going to come and help my teammates out here. I'm going to come and get a punch. I'm going to come and take the catch. Because when I say bravery, it's a different type of bravery to sort of sticking your head in or sticking your boot and you might get hurt. What this does is it exposes you to possibly making a mistake. If you take that front step and you try to come for the ball and somebody gets a flick in front of you, because the crosses, in fairness, were world class.
Yeah, it's like Ramsdale, isn't it? Last week when he played in goal. Made a great save. He's buzzing. So then he bravery comes for a cross. Misses
exactly.
it because he's come for something where his emotions are probably...
That you put yourself in a position to make a possible mistake. Mm. And then when the mistake happens and the ball goes in the back of the net, all eyes are on you. All eyes on you and you're the guy that have messed up for your team. But on the other hand, if you just stand back, it's just as bad. It is. It's just as bad.
It's
because
poor defending, though.
It's poor defending as well. Right. Really, really poor defending. We're talking about set pieces here, by the way. Can we just touch on the fact that Richarlison's goal, the flick-on header to the back post, Diogo Dalot... His job in that set piece, in that corner, is to mark the back post, basically. It's like you should be touch tight to it. So, say, you put your arm out. That's how far away you should be from the post. You should be able to just touch the post, right? And you stay there until the action has finished, right? As soon as the ball gets whipped in, it gets whipped into that near post-ish space. Richarlison gets the first flick. As soon as he sees the ball come into that first space, Dalot moves off the post so far that the ball goes in the far corner. And as a set piece coach...
Yeah, but why? Stop you there, but why? Because the first time he done it.
Yeah.
So what was different? What's he thinking? Because when Benteke headed it across, he dropped to the back post and flicked it away.
Yeah.
So what a player, like, I don't get the player's mentality then is, why have you changed it?
Yeah.
What are you thinking now? Richarlison, so it's been the same delivery into that area now, but Richarlison's got the flick on towards goal, but you've moved the other way now.
Yeah.
That's United in a statement. It's crazy.
But that's the mentality of player then. That's the mentality of the player. They only do it when they want to do it.
Exactly. But you know the one, I was going to ask you about this, you know the one, the biggest one for me was when they didn't score just before half-term.
Yeah,
Romero. So he's pretty centre in the six-yard box. I think the keeper should come for that.
Yeah.
But he's being marked by Kobbie Mainoo, who's about 5'8", 5'9".
18 years old.
So, I mean, obviously, you lads have played at the highest level, but when I used to play, my goalie, it was the one time he could actually talk. So he'd be like, get on him, get on, you know.
That shouldn't be the goalie's job at that moment in time. That's too late. That's acute. That's right there and then. That should be done way before. So in the days leading up, Thursday, Friday are normally sort of like tactics days, aren't they? Thursday, Friday leading into the Saturday game are the tactics days where it's like, right, so this is the starting 11, lads. When we have a set piece or a corner against, Romero, threat. He's going to be a threat from a corner. He's going to be a threat from a throw-in. A free kick. So we need our biggest lads to mark him. A centre-back, probably. Romero, it would be centre-back on centre-back, wouldn't it?
So you're getting Varane or you're getting Johnny Evans. Exactly. You're marking him.
One of the big lads.
United's Masson will mark then.
Manu, he can't mark Romero there. No. He cannot. But regardless of that, the ball gets whipped in and the ball where he gets headed from is about 3.5-4 yards out, right? As you look at it, you think, "Oh, I don't know if the goalie can come for that." But if he's a proactive goalkeeper, if that was Nick Pope, I promise you, Nick Pope would have just stood there and caught it. I swear to you, he'd have just stood there and caught it. Right? The fact that Onana's not a proactive goalkeeper means that he's stuck to his line, means that he takes himself out of the equation. He's nowhere near that ball coming in. Whereas a goalie who's even half a step, three quarters of a step out, he can come and get involved in that. He can dive, punch, get it out. He can help his teammates out. Because at that moment in time, I think everybody could sense that it was like, this could be a goal here. This could be a goal here. Couldn't it? I'm watching thinking, this could be a goal here.
Every corner.
So everybody
every
knows
corner
it.
United fan.
Every corner, Yeah,
you are. But look, De Gea wasn't great at it.
No.
And people were saying this yesterday, but I was saying, but two wrongs don't make a right. And David De Gea had served his time as United goalkeeper and proved...
David De Gea was still more of a forward front-footed goalkeeper than what Onana has shown so far.
I watch a Liverpool, I watch a Wolves, we were on about him last week. You see goalkeepers coming for it and it stands out for United that we don't do it. Yeah. Other teams do have goalkeepers that will come and clear that out.
Yeah, without doubt. Yeah,
you've also got two centre-halves who will go and head it, like your Van Dijk's and your Canute's. They are going to clear it.
Big, strong and reliable. There's
Whereas
so much
Man United
for
at the
it.
Moment, they just look fragile every time the ball comes into their box. They just look like they're scared of what's coming or what's going to happen.
If you were given the choice today whether you could have Ange Postecoglou as Man United manager or stick with Erik ten Hag, who would you take?
Good question, but the answer is always the same. Man United have been like this through Ranić, Mourinho, Oli, ten Hag. It's always the same. You can change the manager, but I just don't think Man United players are technically as good as what Spurs have got, Brighton have got, Newcastle have got. Yeah. I think if Ange came in there, he's going to have to do what United needs to do anyway. He's not going to get those players from yesterday. I'm not going to individualise it because we always do that, but he's not going to get those players to play like Spurs play.
Do you think... I would slightly disagree with this. I would slightly disagree because I think Postecoglou has come into Spurs. He's been there 5 months now and he has, within that 5 months, already made a clear identity for the way Tottenham play. He's brought in James Maddison. Is that about it? Van der Ven? Two players, really. Lost one of the best strikers in world football and has still made them better than what they were last season. And in 5 months, I think he's made Spurs into a genuine sort of title contender, really. So I think that if he did go into Manchester United, I think he would have half a chance of changing that the way that it is.
But Bissouma and Sarr are better than anything we've got in our midfield. Maddison is a more technical number 10 than Bruno. Son and Kulusevski are miles ahead as technical wingers.
Yeah.
And then back four, I think the back fours are quite similar. But, you know, what he's got out of Porro. And I must admit, they put Udogie in their team of the week last week. I was like, he's overrated.
Oh,
he absolutely pocket. You know, we can't criticise Garnacho for not putting service in. He was too busy in the pocket of Udogie. He absolutely bullied him. So,
Do you think Postecoglou would do a better job at United than what Ten Hag would?
Maybe with the players, I think he would.
Yeah.
I think when we look at the job that he's done with Tottenham and the way that he speaks in the media, I think a lot of players respect him.
Yeah.
I think there's still that like not sure Ten Hag at Man United with the players. There's still that little bit of friction. Obviously, we've seen it with Sancho going back to Borussia Dortmund. Has he got that relationship like Anjaz at Tottenham?
What is that? Is that players? Personal?
I think it is. I think it's man management skills.
Yeah.
I think you've got to have that with the players nowadays. You've got to have that belief, the confidence that the Tottenham players have got. I mean, he's not bothered. You play out from the back, like even bringing the goalkeeper in.
Proper goal.
Vicario. Really. I mean, what a goalkeeper. Oh. I didn't. To replace someone like Luis, you've got to be good.
He's been
a great, great signing for Tottenham. And he's not comfortable with the ball at his feet, but he still does it.
He knows his capabilities and his limitations. Don't try to overcomplicate it. No. He'll do what he knows he can do. And he sticks within them two parameters, mate. And there's so much to be said for it.
But the Tottenham players all know what they need to do. When you watch them, they play as a team.
Yeah.
Man United, at the moment, are just not playing as a team.
I do agree on that point. I think if Ange comes in, and you know, you could even put it down to the language as well. You know, Australian compared to a Dutch guy, he's got a better grasp of the language. We see that with Ten Hag. You know, Ten Hag can come across as quite cold, and because he's not speaking his number one language, of course. But I think Ange is more of a people person. But then, as a United fan, I'd say, are the Spurs players more willing to be told who the boss is than certain United players who are going to be like, you've only managed Celtic? I mean, Rangnick invented gegenpressing, and they were like, who's this?
Say it in a German accent, go on.
What?
Gegenpressing.
Is that German, was it?
Yeah, it's just gegenpressing. All right, lads, world-class talk there. Genuinely, some incredible insights there of Tottenham and Man United. I want to talk about Aston Villa. We've got to start with VAR, lads. We have to start with VAR. And
you can explain it, because I don't know.
I'm confused with it all now.
Honestly.
I'm lost with it.
It's just ruining it.
Yeah, it was offside. The first pass back.
It's off, yeah.
He's off.
It's off, but then it's a foul at the same time as well.
Just get on with it. 5 seconds back.
It's 4 minutes, mate. It took four minutes. If I was at that game yesterday and I'm sitting there for 4 minutes, I'm in an hour and I'm waiting and wondering, it just spoils it. It ruins it.
Just put your flag up. If he's offside, put your flag up, because it's a wonder goal.
Yeah.
And he's off celebrating it, and then the disappointment now of looking at a screen, drawing a line, you can see his foot's ahead of
the... That's just the player's perspective. That's just the one player. Think about the 10, 15,000 Aston Villa fans in that stadium there and then, who have paid good money to travel up to Everton, paid for their match ticket, their hot dogs, their beers, and they're buzzing and they're spilling stuff and they're jumping around going crazy. And then all of a sudden it sinks in about 2 seconds later and go, wait a minute, let's just wait to see first.
But as an Everton fan, the longer that goes, you're probably thinking, shit, this might be a goal then, because everybody's a loser. I mean, I was watching it at home, and I was just like, he's offside and there's a foul. That's took me 10 seconds to see that. What are we looking at the shot for?
Yeah.
They've gone to the shot. Yeah. They're looking at the shot, which is not part of the... I'm like, what are they doing?
Whether somebody's in front of Pickford and all
this. Why? You've already seen your
region. We had FA Cup last weekend.
But Dan Juma was there as well. So the Everton player was there. So there's actually no interference.
It's horrible.
It's just a wonder strike the ball's gone in the net. But
the whole thing's horrible.
It shouldn't even be getting to that point. You should be just... If you're in line with it and you can see he's offside, put your flag up.
Put your flag up and go.
Put your flag up.
Simple as that. Make it as quick and painless as possible. But this brings me on to the FA Cup last week. So I'm watching some of these FA Cup matches last week and I'm thinking, you know what, I'm really enjoying this. Because if the goal goes in and the linesman points back to the centre circle and the referee points back to... I know it's a goal. The player who scored that goal sees the referee point towards the centre circle. Yeah. He knows it's a goal. All the fans know exactly the same thing. And you get time to actually lose yourself for 15, 20 seconds.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it used to be. Imagine that. Imagine being able to lose yourself on a Saturday afternoon at a football match where that's what you've worked your whole week for, and then it's taken away from you because of VAR. Somebody in front of a computer screen gone, hold on a minute, hold on. Let's rewind it back. You have a look. What do you think? And it just kills it. It absolutely kills it. So get rid. We agreed again.
I wouldn't say get rid, because obviously
what would you keep
we want to
then?
Move the game forward, don't we, all the time? I think it's just common sense in it and just speeding it up, and the people behind the screens are seeing it. Just make the decision straight away.
Yeah.
It's then you're accountable for that. You can't blame the referee because you've told the referee that's the decision. Yeah. Referee makes decision. We get on with it.
Well, we've got another VAR chat in a minute. Burnley Luton.
Oh dear.
Something happened in the Burnley Luton game with poor James Trafford, which again makes me just say, what's the point? What's the point of it anymore? It's just like a goal goes in and it's like you've bought a lottery ticket, so there's a chance you might be a goal or a big chance you probably won't be a goal. Anything could happen.
If I said to you, right, Ben, you know, you're going to send a letter off to Amazon, you know, because you've got an interview coming up. Do you want to send Jamie there on his bike, or should we send it by email? The Premier League is sending Jamie on the bike. But that's what they're doing. Like you're ruining the game.
Oh, Jamie.
The game. Fast though, Mark.
Yeah, we'll all send Jamie on the bike.
You're ruining the game, you
but,
are,
but
Jamie.
We're ruin, but, we're ruining, but we're ruining the game, aren't we? Like you say, the FA Cup and the Carabao Cup, we're not talking about the quality of the game, but the flow of the
game.
Oh,
it's a game of football.
If he doesn't give a penalty, yeah. We know it's not a penalty. If it's not offside, we know it's not offside. We know it's not a red card. We know it's a goal. You play on. To actually be presiding over something that's worse and pushing the envelope. The Championship's a better league because it flows better. They've got to do something about it. The technology's obviously not there and the competence with the referees is not there. I wouldn't get rid of it altogether, but it shouldn't have been brought in when it wasn't.
When you were at Millwall, you enjoy your Saturday afternoons, don't you? Because, like I say, you know if it's a goal or not. You know when the referee points to the centre circle.
Yeah, you know.
You're not waiting, are you?
No, you're not waiting at all, but they're also the level of refereeing sometimes in the Championship can be better.
It's lower,
It can be better because you do get some decisions where you're like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
But it's their decision. It's human no one error. Else's. It's human error. And that's where we look at, that's what the game's all about. Yeah. Human error. Like a player will make a mistake. It's my fault. The referee makes a mistake. Everything goes quiet.
Yeah.
They all go in hiding. Oh, it's them now. It's them in the box where they're watching it. It's their fault. No, just come together and make the technology work, but make it free-flowing.
Yeah,
make it enjoyable. Make the fans go to games knowing I'm not going to be sitting there for 4 minutes waiting for a decision whether it's a goal or not a goal.
We've got to talk about this stat from Unai Emery, by the way. At this moment in time, since he took over, he is averaging 2 points per game for Aston Villa. So 46 games in charge for Aston Villa, 92 points he's gotten from that. No manager in Premier League history has ever averaged at 2 points a game for their team and not gone on to win the Premier League title. That's ridiculous, isn't it? That is some sort of turnaround from when Steven Gerrard had them and they were languishing a bit, to come in and do that with a mid-table team. That's outrageous, isn't it?
Incredible. But I think he's an incredible manager. I think he had a tough time at Arsenal when he was first there. He's gone away, regrouped, done really well at Villarreal was he?
Did he go to?
Yeah. Come to Aston Villa, and I must say, I actually enjoy watching them now. They are, like, the way they play, their movement, they create loads of chances.
They do,
they create so many chances, but not just for Watkins, but for Bailey's creating chances.
The RB.
Yeah. They've just got a team that look like they're going to score every time they play.
That's what I like. They're still playing that high line. Do you remember the first game of the season where they played that Newcastle game? They got absolutely pumped. They're still playing that high line, but they've got it off to a tee now. There was an offside, I think it was Calvert-Lewin maybe, where the Villa players are virtually on the halfway line and Calvert-Lewin is half a step ahead of everybody. I'm thinking that's either crazy or genius, but it was genius because it was absolutely bob on. It's like they're drilled down so fine now to make it work.
And it was a good game, you know, for a 0-0, like you say, it was a good game. I mean, the last half an hour was some right good tackles going in.
Yeah, it got feisty.
I thought, you know, it was arguably...
Robbo game, that.
Proper game.
It was a good game, you know, Tarkowski in the corner, players running in, you know, Tielemans and Coleman, and it was end-to-end. It was a good game for a 0-0. I mean, that was an advert, you know, people who don't know football, they go 0-0 boring. I said, you can have the best 0-0 game in the world, and I thought that was really
cool. You mentioned the Tarkowski challenge. Did you see the Tarkowski challenge, by the way?
I saw the one where he was in the box as well, where he's got the ball and it was studs follow through.
That was a penalty, you know.
So hold on a minute, all right? So if you want to say that to this guy next to you here, who will say that is a proper challenge?
No, not the Tarkowski one. You know the one just before it?
Oh, yeah,
where that
was
him. Sterling's had a penalty for that, and that disgusts me because Sterling goes down. It's really clever in the Chelsea game. Was it Diaby?
Yeah,
Villa. He gets the contact, the same, stays on his feet. This is what we're talking about. I mean, we're never going to get this level of officiating.
No,
but he should get a penalty for that because Sterling dives.
Yeah.
You know,
he's looking for it.
He takes the foul. Bruno did it against Wigan. Diaby feels the contact, stays on his feet, play on.
No, that's the problem.
That's why players go down because you don't get
a penalty. So you may as well dive and get a penalty.
But that's sometimes the honesty of a player that was isn't it?
If you're built like that, that's what you'll do. And that's fine because that's what you've got to look in the mirror.
I didn't think the Tarkowski one. It was a big tackle.
Do you know what it is? It's a freebie. It's a freebie hit, isn't it? I saw a little glint in your eyes then, Robbo, because you know you're winning the ball, right? But it's like, I'm going to empty you after this challenge as well. I'm going to win the ball and I'm going to follow through and I'll make sure I hurt you a little bit. And it sounds bad to say it, doesn't it? Yeah. But majority of players would do the same to you.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you get the chance to do that, you do it to them, don't you?
It's the way that it goes. Now, though, Wan-Bissaka got one yesterday, didn't he?
Yeah.
Did it on Brennan Johnson. Yeah. Got the ball, took him out.
That's
card.
The way that it goes, though, isn't it, Robert? You made a career off that, didn't you?
Made a career of making big tackles.
Yeah.
And it is now, it's the, like you say, the Wan-Bissaka one where he's come through the side. He's clearly got the ball, but he's followed through. It's taken Johnson out. It's a yellow card. I think the game now is trying to prevent them type of tackles. You're endangering an opponent when you're going in. But that's what fans love. They love that tackle.
Yeah. It gets them
on the edge of their seat.
How many red cards do you get in your career?
Less than Roy Keane, I think nine.
Nine? Yeah. I reckon if you were playing in today's football, you would be in the 20s or 30s, easy.
No, I think I'd be a better player now.
Do you? Yeah.
I think with the technology.
You have to be cleverer.
Yeah, more cleverer. I think I'd, like you say, I'd play the game. Because I love playing football. Yeah. I love getting the ball down and play football. And I think now as a defender, like we've seen it, as soon as you go to your feet, it's yellow card, red card.
Yeah, you've got to stand up now, haven't you?
Giving away the Fulham one penalty where he slid in on Sterling. You just can't afford to go down now.
I don't know. I've seen the red mist of you sometimes, mate. I think sometimes it just takes over, all right?
Whatever, 80-odd games? That's not bad.
That's not bad at all, that. You'll take that. You'll take that all day long,
You get a lot more Christmases off, though, now, won't you?
Oh, yeah.
I too rescinded as well, which was lovely.
Right, we've got to talk about Chelsea. They kind of stumbled to a 1-0 win at the weekend. Cole Palmer on fire again. I just want to talk about Chelsea in general, really. Where are Chelsea right now in general?
I think they're quite similar to United, but obviously it's the first season.
Are they as good as United?
They've got better players.
Yeah.
I mean, I really like Conor Gallagher. I don't know why they're trying to sell him. I think, when you know, the thing I'm starting to notice with United over the last few years is they buy good players, but they don't do the background checks on the mentality. And you look at someone like Conor Gallagher, he's going to give you everything every week. And he's a talented player. I mean, that outside of the foot shot that hit the post.
Oh, lovely. Schwaz on it.
Yeah, but I think that I think they desperately need a striker. Cole Palmer's a really good player.
Really good player.
They've got some good young players coming through. But I just think Chelsea fans would probably agree, it's the identity of the team. They don't... I mean, you see Thiago Silva, what a player he is, Rolls-Royce defender. Yeah. He gets frustrated. And I think that's the thing with Chelsea. You watch them and it's like, what are they going to become? Because I think 2024 could be a big year for them, but they're still... I watch them and I go, what's the identity?
Do you know what I worry a little bit of Chelsea? I think Chelsea, and I think people's opinion of Chelsea, is that they bought all these incredibly gifted young players who are going to go on to... But do you know what? Football don't work like that. It doesn't. Football don't work like champ man. You know, like Championship Manager when you play it, or Football Manager. You buy these young players and it's like, oh, well, I can loan him out for 2 or 3 years and he's going to be good because I've already seen on the internet that his potential ability is this, so he's guaranteed. It doesn't work like that in real life football. You can't just sign a bunch of kids and hope that they will work, especially in today's football. You need a different sort of character and mentality and professionalism to be a top player nowadays, don't you? You can't just trust that ability alone is going to do it, can you?
No, but all teams need an identity, like Mark said there. It's like Man United at the moment. They're trying to find the balance of where do their players play, where are their best positions. Yeah. Chelsea the same, but they've just gone on a spending spree that everyone's gone, what are you doing?
Yeah,
so they've
brought
all these players, but no one really knows where they're going to play.
Yeah.
So... like Potter's obviously was there first. Now Pochettino's come in. He's working with a group of players that they've just all been put together.
Yeah.
So you've got to try and find an identity.
You know as well, Robert, you know as well that so a lot of them players in that Chelsea team are on 7-year contracts, right?
Yeah.
You know, as an ex-footballer yourself, that when players have got... I've never seen a 7-year contract, by the way.
No.
I know that when players had a 4-year contract, it was... I knew they would be taking their foot off the gas for a bit. A good year and a half, maybe. They would. Subconsciously, it's like, I can breathe. I'm secure.
Does that contract thing, is that big in football then?
It's massive.
Because
it's massive.
That's something I don't think fans ever take into account.
They never take it into account. They don't understand it.
Player thinks about a contract.
I've got no... Financially, he's got no worries for the rest of his life. He is settled. That 7-year contract, if he gets injured tomorrow and breaks his leg and can never play again, he's still settled. So... subconsciously, it depends on the character you are. You get a 7-year deal, Robbo, you're never changing. I get a 7-year deal, I'd never change. I'd still be the same person, same player. I'll give you everything I've got. But the modern footballer, you give them a 7-year contract, you're asking for trouble, aren't you?
Yeah, you are, yeah. Yeah, you're just playing into the players' hands with how they're going to be as an attitude-wise. Like you say, if you don't get the right player with the right attitude, that seven-year deal to him after 1 or 2 years and another player comes in on his position, he's like, all right, I've got another 5 years here.
Yeah. I suppose it's the same as, like, you know, United have done this a few times. You take someone who's on 20 grand a week, like Anthony, you give him 200 grand a week.
Oh, wow.
What does that do to your mentality? Does that make you come in hungry and determined?
Does it heck?
Unless you've got the right mentality.
Yeah, unless you've got
the mentality. We've talked about this before as well, the price tag and now the pressure on that player coming from another country to settle straight away, like an Anthony. We all know what a good player he can be. But watching him, everyone gets frustrated just watching him. Yeah. Like even the Man United players must be thinking, well, there's no point in me making that run because I actually don't know if you're going to pass me it.
Yeah.
Or, right, you're going to cross it? No, you're not. You're going to cut back now and just go back to where we've just come from and you've just stopped the attack. It's that mentality of a player, isn't it? It's finding that right player. So that pressure with that value on your head is... You just got to try and settle as quick as you can. And it's so hard in football, but people don't see that.
No, they don't.
People don't see that person on a day-to-day basis with what they might be feeling. And we've talked about it before, Ben, haven't we?
Yeah, yeah.
We've talked about settling in quickly, making them feel comfortable, making them used to the environment. But it is, it's like, we're talking about Chelsea now, with all of them players on them contracts.
Kids as well.
And the money they're on as well. They're living in London, which is probably not the best place to be living.
Oh.
They're living the dream, some of them, because they're thinking, my gosh, I've got a seven-year deal here now and... I'm in London. Loving it. I'm loving it. You imagine, where's your hunger? Where's your drive?
Like you ask the population, if there's any 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old kids watching, I say kids, they're young men. If you're suddenly given a seven-year deal on 150 grand a week, what are you doing? Do you know what I mean? You want to go out and party. You want to go out and have a nice time. You want to spend it on flash. You're reckless at that age. You know what I mean? Your emotional intelligence is zero. Like, it must be so difficult to deal with. And people will say, oh, cry me a river. Come on, you're on. But it will alter how you play football and how professional you are. It will, subconsciously. Well, I don't care what you say.
We had an interview with Anthony on the United stand. It was just a written one. And it was asked about, like, you know, settling in. And he said, look, you know, you got people like Roy Keane and whoever taking a pop at me straight away. Have they ever thought that, if they encourage me, it might help, you know, and it's true, isn't it?
Everybody's a human being at the end of the day. Everybody's a human being and everybody sees everything they do. I don't care what you say. Nowadays, the modern footballer, everybody's got Twitter, everybody's got Instagram, everybody reads every column inch about themselves. They do.
But it's just someone's opinion, though. You shouldn't be looking at that.
True that.
If you've got a strong mentality and you don't care what people think, just do what you get paid to do.
A player's for Man United. A player's built the way they used to be built, Robert.
No, they're not robust enough. Really? But there's no support from either, I don't think. There's not enough support from...
To teach that resilience,
to help when help's needed.
Yeah.
And that support around you. It's like you say, we've talked about it. You've got your move, you've got your deal, your agent. I'm done with you now. My next player. I'm going to my next player now. I'm worried about where I'm going to move you, what I'm going to earn now in that. It just... The football now for me is just an industry where... We're just happy to let them get on with it how they need to get on with it and not worry about them, because
there's no duty of care anymore.
There's no duty of care. There's no support from when they need the support. And it's hard to watch sometimes.
Yeah.
The money in the game as well, isn't it?
It's ridiculous.
You don't create your Gerrard, your John Terry, your Roy Keane.
It's a blessing and a curse.
You don't create them anymore.
It is. It's a blessing and a curse. The money in the game is brilliant because it attracts better players and there's more light on it, but it is a massive curse at the same time. Again, fantastic. Well done, you lot.
Just quickly, was it a red card, Gusto?
Yes.
Yeah.
In today's football, it's a red card.
Do we know why?
Probably in a days gone by, it was probably a red card as well.
Because I was fuming. I was watching Match of the Day on Saturday night, Sunday morning, because I don't normally watch it. Yeah. And I thought, I'll watch this because I was so mad. And Mika Richards said, not a yellow card for me. Fine. Opinion. Mm. I can't remember who was sat next to him. And Lineker, yeah, I think we all agree it's a yellow card. I was like, what?
No.
What are you talking about? We've seen...
You can't go over the ball.
We've seen Curtis Jones.
Like
we've seen Bissouma.
Simple.
I don't necessarily agree they're all red cards. I think sometimes you can go in for a tackle, slip over the top and it's accidental and you can get injured in playing football. But from what we've seen this season, I thought that was a disgusting
In modern
decision.
Day football, I watched that game live actually, and as soon as the tackle happened...
I thought it straight away.
I said, oh, he's off. And...
He's done it before, though, hasn't he?
Yeah,
he's done the same tackle and got red
card. Done the same tackle before.
He went to VAR.
And I thought, well, that regardless of whether the referee's seen it there and then and whatever he's thought about it, VAR will step in and give it a red card because of, like you say, the ones that you've mentioned there, the Jones ones, the other ones. and it didn't happen. And again, VAR, it just makes me scratch my head and just go, well,
I'd love to know what their justification is.
We need the text, we need the talking, the communication for what they saw and what they said and why they came to that decision.
If they're justifying that, they've just changed the rules from the first half of the season, haven't they?
Yet again.
Which you shouldn't do, which we're going to talk about the goalie.
Okay, well, perfectly, it brings me on to the Burnley-Luton game. And without doubt, this is up there with one of the worst VAR decisions I've ever seen. Probably as bad. Think back to, do you remember when Aston Villa and Nygaard was in goal and he carried the ball over the line?
Yeah, and he didn't get it.
And goal line technology failed for the first time ever in the history of ever. This is nearly as bad as that, actually, to be honest with you, because it is the most blatant. I need to hear the communication that the VAR have had on this one, because I watched a Vinnie Company. His interview after the game, he did a press conference. And if you haven't watched it, go and watch it, by the way, because he's incredible. The way he talks about it is just, yet again, he's left scratching his head, because something that's so clear, so obvious, it's not even subjective anymore, this one. This one isn't even subjective. The player has taken a quick glance to see James Trafford coming out. He's turned his back into him on purpose to block the goalkeeper coming out. And the second that the goalkeeper's about to take off, by the way. So he's not even worrying about that player. He's just thinking, I'm going to come. And so he's just about to spring. You're off balance. You're off kilter. You can't do anything at that point. The player backs into you. The player heads it in. The referee gives the goal. It stands. What's the point? What is the point? Do you know what I mean? It's like, and Vinnie Kompany says himself, he says, the fact that we're Burnley and it's a Burnley-Luton on a Friday night means that tomorrow this mistake will get swallowed up by your Newcastle, your Chelsea, your Man United. It will get swallowed up and it won't even get talked about.
Which it has before in the past, hasn't it? Yeah. With Alisson. Alisson's done it. Yeah. Where he's come, caught the ball, players pulled his arm.
Yeah.
And they've disallowed the goal.
But it's Liverpool. It's Liverpool.
Because it's Burnley and Luton.
Yeah.
And it's two teams fighting for survival at the bottom of the Premier League. It's, we let that one go. No, just keep it consistent.
Is that lack of respect, is it?
I think it's respect. I think it's totally disrespectful to them. And I think, like you say, Vincent Kompany, your team's going to get 3 points. It's like near the last kick of the game.
Yeah, it's massive.
And you've let that happen to the goalie, and they've scored, and they're coming away like with a point.
Yeah.
Whereas Burnley should be coming away with 3 points.
It's almost like the VAR, and it's like this is probably a good result for what we want in the Premier League. Like, putting your kind of like skeptical.
But it's wrong though,
isn't it? Putting your skeptical hat on, it makes you think, well, they're probably the two smallest teams in the Premier League, yeah? Like, it's a good result. It means none of them really catch ground on anybody, do you know what I mean? And it's what they would have wanted. And it makes me worry that's kind of might have gone through people's heads subconsciously. Do you know what I mean? The VAR guys thinking, this is good for the game. It's Friday night football. It's something to talk about. And that's not how it should be.
I think the cynic in me, I think this goes back to the Newcastle game, you know, where they're pushing the back of Gabriel.
Yeah.
I think there's been conversations behind the scenes that we've made such a big mistake there with that physicality that we need to start finding a couple of decisions where there's a bit of, we need to start making it acceptable to shove people in the box. Because I don't see any justification. I didn't watch the game. I just saw the clip and I was like, well, that's a foul. And again, it's a bit like, well, VAR will save. I think goalkeepers do get overprotected at times. You probably disagree.
I completely disagree.
But
I do.
But we know that. We've known that for probably 20 years. Yeah. If you touch the goalkeeper in the box, it's probably going to be a foul.
Right. The only way I can kind of try and back the goalkeepers up with this is until you've been in that position, right? And when you try and come and take off, come and spring off, and you've got your eyes on the ball, and the second you are, you could have one foot on the ground or both off the ground. Now, as soon as you've got your arms up there and you're looking at that ball only, the second somebody come and blindside you, swipes you, touches you, elbows you, nudges you, anything, right? Anything, it will knock your whole body off kilter. Your centre of gravity just gets knocked. Your arms go, your legs go. You then start worrying about where you're going to fall, because if you're getting knocked properly, you can go head out, you can land on your net, you can do all sorts. That is it. The goalies are not overprotected with that. And the same with the Alisson one. The Alisson one, I think, is a foul. It's a foul because he's gone to take off and somebody's nudged him. Somebody's pulled his arm. And you can't, when these balls are flying in at 60, 70 miles per hour, right? You're talking very, very split seconds, minute seconds. So it's a foul. Any contact in that moment in time is a foul. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, 100%. And as soon as it went to VAR, you're going, this is getting disallowed.
Yeah.
But the fact that then they've given it, you're like, oh my God.
Disgusting.
Oh,
you should hear Vinnie Kompany's interview. I promise you. Just go and give it to a listen to it. It's on the Sky Premier League thing. He says when the goal went in, he said, I flung my arms up and I started moaning and complaining. And he said, and the only reason why I did it was because I thought the very tiny, minute chance that they might actually allow the goal. He said, I had no worries whatsoever that it would be allowed. He said, I was almost certain that it would be disallowed. He said, but I threw my arms up just so they knew that I, and they could see it, visually see that I was upset about it.
Yeah.
And he said, and that's the only reason why I did it. He said, but then as time went on, he said, I'm looking at the referee, I'm looking at the linesman, nobody's intervening in VAR. And he thought, no, come on. Like,
I'll tell you what.
What's the point? What is the point? It's almost like people are dictating the outcome of a game. But it's not about the football anymore.
It's interesting that he obviously played for Man City, didn't he? Because Man City at the weekend and at Everton, this is what they do. Acting, throwing their hands in the air.
Look at you. The Man City hatred just continues.
No, it wasn't a goal. But look, it's sad that he has to do that. And it's sad that it's happened to Fulham and Burnley, because he's right. It'll get brushed down, and we shouldn't brush it down, because it happens. Wolves have had it all season.
Yeah, right. We've got a couple more things we want to talk about. I want to talk about Jordan Henderson. I want to talk about Eric Dier as well. Quickly though, Robbo, before we move on, Burnley have now, they've dropped 18 points from winning positions in the Premier League. If you're a newly promoted team, that stat there is the sort of stat that will get you relegated, isn't it?
It will, but they're not going to change. Vincent Kompany has a way of that they want to play. They did it in the Championship. They smashed the Championship plan that way. And he wants to play that style of football. It's as defenders, you've got to try and hope that your defenders keep clean sheets. And at the moment, it's just such a tough league because of the quality in the Premier League.
You get punished so easily.
You leave yourself open, you're getting punished. Yeah. But it's the style of football that he wants. And it is entertaining at times because they got some quality players in the final third. But it's keeping them clean sheets. That's the hardest thing for them at the moment.
And when you're winning as well, try and sort of... It flies in the face of what he wants to do as a manager. He wants to keep his team on the front foot. Sometimes you would want to go, just get 10 men behind the ball and defend and block it.
Again, we've been talking about identity with certain teams. He has one.
Yeah.
He has the way that he wants his team playing. He has a structure. He believes in them. He gives them the opportunity. It's about them players just trying to do it.
Yeah. And I think, you know what? I think Burnley fans are on board with him as well, because I think he is as a manager and as a person, his people skills, his charisma, his character, I think people buy into that. And I think the Burnley players buy into it. It's very similar to Postecoglou. I think the way they deal with the media and deal with things is very... I like the way it's done anyway. We're going to talk about Eric Dier then. Just got a move to off to Germany with his mate Harry Kane. Fantastic move for him, by the way. Fantastic move. I think Eric Dier is the kind of player that... I want him in my team, first and foremost. He's professional, he's a grafter. He might not be the most technically gifted of players, but he's going to be the sort of player that you know you can rely on him and you know he'll be professional and he can play a multitude of positions as well.
I really like him. I think his best position is though sitting midfield.
Yeah.
I like him just sitting in front of the back four just because of his awareness and what he does. He just covers ground well. And I think... Obviously, his time was up at Tottenham was when he ran into the crowd to confront that fan.
Can you remember that, by the way?
I think that was, when you look at Eric Dier's career at Tottenham, I think that was the point for him where he knew this is the time for me now where I need to move on. So, no, I think it's a great move for him. Great move for Bayern. Obviously, Harry Kane's over there, so it's a mate from Tottenham.
Yeah.
Help Harry settle down, even though Harry doesn't need to settle down because he scores ridiculous goals wherever
he goes. How important is that then as a player, Robbo, to have... So Harry Kane, he's moved over to Germany.
Yeah.
Probably he knew of them players and he would have been cordial with them, and it's kind of... He'd have been made to feel at home and settle quite easily. But how important is it to have a real ally, a real friend come over? Because by all accounts, they were best friends at Spurs anyway. How nice is that? Not only for Harry, but you've got to think about Harry's wife.
Yeah.
Then you've got Eric Dier, you've got his friend, obviously. And then Eric's wife or girlfriend... For the partners, for the family, for the lifestyle. I think that's important as well, isn't it?
I think that's the biggest thing, is off the field.
Yeah.
I think, like you say, for your wives, as players, it's great for us because we're going into a working environment every day. So we get to see everyone. We get to have a laugh. We get to have a joke. We get to play football. We get to enjoy each other's company. But for the wives, it's hard. Like, you've just moved to a different country.
Don't know no one.
You've got no friendship circle.
Yeah.
Your kid's schooling. You're changing schools. It's now learning a different language.
Well, you haven't got that network as well. You're used to having grandparents.
Hard,
like you're
parents,
used to having friends to look after kids and take the stress off and pressure off.
So to have someone now who you've been around for years at Tottenham to now go and join you at Bayern, it will only help, like you say, Katie's wife and the kids settle and get to know each other again and like you say have that friendship circle that they had at Tottenham.
Is this as a fan, Mark? Right, obviously you've not been in that world, you don't get to see how important that part is. As a fan, is that something that's I was going to say overlooked, but I don't think it's even looked at one little bit, is it?
No, I mean, I think the only thing I can relate it to for recently with United was when Mourinho was manager and he was living in a hotel.
Yeah.
And it bothered me because I was like, he's got such a big job to do. And his family, I think, was either in London or it might have been in Europe. And you're like,
what are you doing in that hotel all the time?
It's
you know
not easy.
Four walls.
It? Living in a hotel. Yeah. I mean, I've done courses away in Warrington for a week and it's not great, you know. But seriously, it's like, you know, and it must be the same for players as well, isn't it? You know, go and play. I remember speaking to Paul Ince when he went to Milan. He said, I loved it, but family, it was hard for the wife.
Yeah.
So we had to come back.
Yeah.
So, it's not always as easy as go and get that player from there, is it? It's about the network to settle them in, isn't it?
This is why I think it's a clever signing. It is. It's such a clever signing for Bayern Munich. Like I say, you can play in two or three positions. You can play centre-back in a four. You can play as a defender in a three. You can play, like I say, holding midfielder. And I think just having that sort of player, that like a utility player almost, somebody that you can rely on if you've got injuries or niggles, is, it's all right, Eric can do that, it's fine. Or even in game, if something happens, he can slot into that position. Yeah. Them sort of players are invaluable, aren't they?
Oh, they are. They're so important for any team is to sign a player that can play numerous positions. Yeah. I mean, we've seen it with Kimmich. He was a right back, but he can play centre midfield. Yeah. He plays advanced midfield. It, like when you look at Bayern's team, their players move around. They play in numerous
a bit like
positions.
Man City.
So they're like Man City. Yeah. So to sign a player like Eric Dier, yes, it's important for their team now that you've got a player that can play in numerous positions. But also for Harry and his wife now, you've now got an ally where you've got your wife and his children now that are that support system for them off the pitch. Which is great. It just works. I think it just works really well that they've done that, Bayern.
Yeah, I hope he
could get back in the England squad.
I hope he goes and does well. I really do. I hope he goes and does well. I hope he hits the ground running like Harry Kane does as well. We've got to talk about. We're nearly at the end, by the way. It's been a fantastic show, this, lads. Honestly, the insight today has been phenomenal. We've got to talk about Jordan Henderson though, and how basically how badly this move has gone for him. Obviously, at the beginning, it was £700,000 a week or whatever it was. It was life changing money, generational money. But I think it's all kind of started to turn a little bit sour, hasn't it, Mark? Because by all accounts, he wants to come home now.
Well, everyone called it out for what it was at the start. It was about money.
Yeah.
And he's not helped himself. And, you know, you talk about the likes of Rashfords and players coming over to this country. Jordan Henderson knows the game.
Yeah.
You know, Jordan Henderson's been captain of Liverpool. I think he's been captain of England. He knows how to speak to the media. So to be so badly advised and start talking about he's going over there to better the game, he's not going there for money. And everyone knew he was going there for money. And I think if you were honest and just said that...
I don't think he can be honest, though. I don't think he's going to be allowed to be honest. I think when you sign for the Saudi League, I think you are duty-bound... By the league.
Yeah.
To say a certain something. I think you are duty-bound to say, no, I want to better the league. The standard over there is phenomenal. The passion for football in Saudi is incredible. I think you have to say those sort of things.
And that's fair enough. But then the problem is now that the Saudi league must be fuming with him, quite rightly, because they've paid him ridiculous amounts of money.
And they paid a good transfer fee as well, 15, I think.
That, you know, the Saudi league's about positivity, come over here, we want to take on the world. Well, Henderson's destroyed all that. Because he's basically saying, it's crap here, I don't like it, I'm not enjoying it, I want to get out. Yeah. And that you know, they pay all that money for that. So I don't think he comes out of it from anywhere in a good place. You can understand why he wants to get out, but I don't think anyone's going to be very happy with him. And you look at it and you sort of go, well, what did you expect?
I just think he's been badly advised. Forget the money. Yeah, it's a great load of money and you should have come out and been honest like that. Maybe, like you say, the league say you can't, but the golfers did in the end.
Yeah.
The golfers in the end turned around and said, no, I've just come here for the money.
Yeah.
That's all it is. And I'd rather that honesty to say I'm going over there for the money. So for someone like Jordan Henderson now, he's going to have regrets.
Yeah.
But for him now, the most important thing is I think he's just getting his football back on track.
Yeah.
To what a good player he has been over the years and what a good player he could still bring to a team. What team that will be, if he's allowed to go to a team, who knows? But for him now, I think we just need to see the Jordan Henderson that we saw at the Liverpool and the Sunderland growing up.
As a footballer, we know it's about the money, don't we?
Yeah, of course, like, we do.
He can say what he wants and the media can do this and the press and the fans can think a certain something. But as footballers, if that Saudi opportunity comes up, you take it. It's as simple as that, yeah? Money, unfortunately, will wash away all of your morals and your values. It will, won't it? When somebody offers you 500 grand a week, 700 grand a week, we've got to do it. We have to do it. It's as simple as that. It's a 2-year, 3-year deal. We have to go and do it. But
especially at that point in his career, I don't think anyone can knock him. He's won the Champions League. He's won the Premier League. He's played for England.
Yeah.
You know, there's no problem if he just says, I'm off there for the money. I mean, Gerrard's not over there to develop his managerial career, is he? He's there to earn the money.
No, but you look at someone like a Jordan Henderson, he brings a whole lot more off the pitch, though, as well, with him as a player. You could eventually see him as a top coach.
Yeah, for sure.
So why would you not stay at Liverpool and go down that route? You work with the academy players.
He would have a job there for life, wouldn't he?
He would have. And Jurgen Klopp is the type of manager that would look after someone like Jordan Henderson.
Yeah.
So for him, now he's made that horrendous decision. He's been badly advised. It's as simple as that. He has been badly advised, whereas he should have just, right, I'm not going to play for Liverpool as much as what I'd like to, but I know where my goal is in the future now, and that could be a coaching role at this great club.
Well, we'll see. I'm sure it'll all come out in the wash. Where he's going to go, I don't know, because I'm pretty sure that the Al Etifak aren't going to want to just loan him out. I'm not sure anybody's going to want to pay the transfer fee. And then also, I'm not sure that anybody's going to want to pay him crazy wages either. So he's in a difficult little spot, but it is what it is. Lads, fantastic show today. Thank you, Robbo.
Thank you,
Mark. Incredible. Honestly, this has been really, really good today. We are going to finish with the quiz, though. Robbo, what's your ball knowledge like? Average.
Average.
Love that. I love that. Easy win for Foster then. Let's go. Right, Jamie, 10 questions. Are you good to go?
We are good to go.
Let's have
ready?
It.
Question one. Which player holds the record for the most goals in consecutive Premier League games? Jamie Vardy's correct answer.
Didn't even mutter a word then. This could be a painful 10 questions here, Robbo.
Could be, yeah, very bad.
13 goals in 11 games. Question two. Who scored a hat-trick of penalties for Brazil against Argentina in 2004?
Neymar.
No.
In 2004?
Yeah.
Ronaldo.
Ronaldo is the correct answer.
Come on,
man. R9.
R9, the original.
R9.
Question three. What is the name of the only Greek player in the current Liverpool squad?
Tsitsipas.
Tsitsipas, it was Mark.
I said Tsitsipas, he's a tennis player. I said he's a tennis player.
Tennis. I was trying to think of his name.
You just spat on my face.
I just said a tennis player. Oh my God. It's similar though, isn't it?
But did you say Kyrgios?
I said Tsitsipas, and it's Tsimikas.
Yeah.
That's really hard to say. When you've got a bit of a lisp, Tsimikas and Tsitsipas, it's really hard to say, you know.
It's 2-1.
It is. Get me a towel.
Sorry.
All right.
Question four. Can you name one of the three Dutch managers who have won Premier League Manager of the Month award?
Ten Hag.
Ten Hag is the correct answer.
Man United question.
Got Martin Jol for Tottenham and Ronald Koeman
for
Southampton.
Martin Jol's a good one
for Southampton.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Never have got Koeman. No.
Cool.
Yeah, there we go. 3-1-0.
All right.
Question five. The designated player rule in the MLS is also known as
DP.
No. That's just shortening it.
It is known as that.
It is known as that.
Yeah, but that's just shortening it. Like, it's not.
It's overseas, really, isn't it?
Is that what it is? Overseas?
No.
Yeah. Put you there, Mark.
Marky.
No, it is the David Beckham rule.
Oh, really?
Yep, the rule got introduced in 2007 where Beckham moved to the MLS and he was the first designated player.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
You can have three, can't you?
I think Robbo's been hardly done by
that. I have. You can have three, can't you?
It's just short and designated pair to DP.
Yeah,
but that's initialised it as a brief.
It's known as DP out there.
Give him one for that.
I'll give you one.
And the reason I know that is because I went to Toronto and that was it. But they'd already had three, so I couldn't be another DP.
There you go. Give him the point for that.
Yeah, I'll give you a point.
Inside knowledge.
Off the board.
Okay. I'm happy I've got one now. I'm level with Will and Tom.
3-1-1.
Question six. What is Joe Hart's actual first name?
Joseph.
Charles.
Charles is the correct
name. You should know that. Goalkeeper's Union.
Come on, the Union. Oh, come on, the Union.
Charlie.
3-2-1. Question seven. Which player from the AFCON... Let me say it again.
It's going to be African then.
Yeah, I reckon.
Which player from an African Football Confederation country has got the most appearances in Premier League history?
Oh, that's
Essien.
No.
Drogba.
No.
Oh.
Which African player has got the most Premier League appearances?
Oh, no. I know. I think I know who it is now.
I know.
Five,
What do you mean you know it?
I know.
Why are you giving me a countdown? That's not fair.
Because you've got something to film.
Let him back in, Jake.
Sadio Mane.
All back in. All Salah. Back in. Nope.
Oh, you went Salah.
You was going to say. Ben and Robbo, you got one more.
No, he's at Mane. Oh, yeah, he's at Mane.
Five.
This is going to be somebody so obvious, four. Isn't it?
Oh, did he just give it away?
No.
Yaya Toure.
No.
Oh. Could be his brother.
Yeah, could be. Colo Toure.
Colo
Toure. Yeah! This is disgrace. You basically gave him that on a plate.
Team him up. Love it.
353 appearances.
Colo,
Colo,
Colo.
So it's 3-2-2, isn't it?
Yeah.
Question 8. What nation is Pedro Porro from?
Argentina.
No.
No, he's not.
Oh, I know. I know.
You're still in.
He put me off.
Spain. Spain is a great answer.
Yes!
If he's not Argentinian, he's Spanish.
Is he? Yeah. Bloody hell. Spain can outproduce, can't they?
Question 9.
4-2-2.
What is the minimum number of games required to win the FA Cup?
6.
8.
7. 6 is the correct answer.
It's in there. That's massive. It was 6 or 7. I had. I was 4-3-2.
4-3-2. Comes down to it. Question 10.
Feel free to get involved, Robbo.
For what club did Paolo Di Canio play for when he pushed referee?
Sheffield Wednesday.
No.
Sheffield Wednesday.
Get in.
What are you getting involved for? You can't even win. You should have just fed it to me. I'd have seen
it. It means you guys both are on equal points, aren't you?
Sheffield West Ham.
Brilliant.
I'll tell you what, I'd have been good if that
had a great answer, Sheffield West Ham.
I know.
It was Sheffield Wednesday, weren't it? Yeah.
Yeah. 7.
Great push as
what
well.
What was the referee called? Paul.
Alcock.
Yeah, he should have got an Oscar for that, shouldn't he?
Yeah, he should have got
he went back on stage.
Unbelievable
he,
yeah. Oscar.
Have you got a tiebreak question?
I have a tiebreak question.
Just for the. For
and then Nigel Winterburn then went squared up to
yeah,
the.
Yeah, shit himself.
Going so March won the quiz already. By the way, 4-3-3. That was a competitive quiz.
Good show.
Really, really good. Give us a tiebreaker, just in case.
Tiebreaker question: who was the first Italian manager to win the Premier League?
Mancini.
No.
Ranieri.
No.
Oh!
Back in.
Conte.
No.
Italian.
Good
question. Viali.
No. No, you can't come back in. Robbo.
No, I'm thinking of, but he won the Champions League. Did he did within league?
Ancelotti.
Di Matteo.
No,
Ancelotti.
Ancelotti.
Took my time there.
Well done.
2009-10 season with Chelsea.
Wow.
Wow, lads, thank you so much. Really appreciate that today. Robbo, incredible. Mark, fantastic as per usual. Hope you all enjoyed it. Some incredible insight today. We'll see you next week. All the best. Football Philly.